ho, ho, and welcome back to New World Next Year for 2017. This is James Corbett of CorbettReport.com.
And I'm James Evan Pilato of MediaMonarchy.com. As we noted at the end of last week's episode, this is the only episode of New World Next Week of the year where, one, we wear ties, and two, we have no idea what the other one is going to talk about. Now, James, we've basically taken turns on these episodes over the last few years, and last year, you went first. So this year, I'm going to go first. It's our fourth year of this kind of style New World Next Week year-end episode where we each have a look back and we each have a look forward segment. So I actually went and dug back and found my 2013 story. I said the end of money. The 2014 story, I said the mainstreaming of conspiracy. And my 2015 story was the year of divide and conquer. We've done 41 episodes of New World Next Week in 2016, and I think there are some really good ones in there that I hope, you know, really illustrate the year. When the cops steal your stuff, they call it equitable sharing. Soros got hacked. Can you guess what we found? Kissinger awarded by Obama on way to meet Trump, I think, is particularly telling. If I were feeling more optimistic, I'd give Good News Next Week the award for this year and say things like community fridges and the little free libraries are some of the best parts of solutions-oriented kind of ways we're winning good stories for 2016. But I'm not feeling so optimistic. So our episode 277 from July 4th, 2016, I think really puts it all together for me with a great title, too. Killer Cop Robot Kills Cop Killer. It's got World War III prep, blue helmets, the Summer of Rage, killer police robots, and a lot more. But the last footnote to the last story on that episode is where I'm heading, and it's an article you wrote, James. The CIA's Pokemon Go app is doing what the Patriot Act can't, but that's really just a part of it. I call Media Monarchy's 2016 story Mass Movements and the Madness of Crowds. Mass movements is actually a term basically used to describe earthquakes, but I'm repurposing it to describe how I see 2016. There's a classic book from 1841 by a guy named Charles McKay called Extraordinary Popular Delusions and the Madness of Crowds. Among other things, it's about national delusions, peculiar follies, and philosophical delusions. So I've been thinking about this, and even as I'm thinking about it today, I see Lauren Coleman of Copycat Effect tweet just a couple of hours ago saying, "Note how quickly the clowns disappeared post-election." So maybe I talked too much this year about clowns, about Dakota Access Pipeline, about Pizzagate. Some argue that writer, journalist Charles McKay contributed to some of these kind of bubbles, and I'll admit to my own kind of inadvertent fanning of these flames, mostly due to running something like Media Monarchy. I think talking about these national delusions is kind of part of what we do. But I need to remember sometimes to back away from the oven myself. So this also, I think, takes the form of praying for Paris, Orlando, Berlin, putting a flag overlay on your friend face profile. America's Next Top President is the huge example of this, I think, hanging like a shadow over all these kind of mass movements. I think even the idea that 2016 sucked and was like totally the worst year ever is a mass movement that people are into. And I think a lot of this kind of happened before. Remember Kony 2012? And even in a way, I think of Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. Another way to describe this is like the school of fish all swimming around in unison. They're swayed by all the currents, and the only time they kind of break apart and scatter is when the shark comes and eats a couple dozen of them. But then just as quickly as it came on, just like the Pokemon Go craze, it vanishes, and all the little fish go back to the group, and no one remembers anything about it. So, James, for me, it's not so much about Pokemon the thing. It's about this flash mass movement that moves out of the blue and just as quickly kind of diminishes and no one really remembers and no one really thinks anything about it. James?
Very interesting, because that is a phenomenon that I've noted, I've talked about before, and that it still is a question of how people are dealing with the news cycle and attempting to convey information in that news cycle can adequately take into account that mass movement hysteria. This is the biggest thing in the world this precise day, and tomorrow everyone will forget about it. How do you cover that? How do you be a part of that? Or how do you not be a part of that? How do you detach yourself from that? That's a really big question, and one that I think everyone has to think about and ponder in their own way. And I've certainly been doing that in the last week or so here at the Corbett Report, thinking about the Russian ambassador shooting and the Berlin truck phenomenon and all that. It really makes me think, well, what is my value here in this? Am I just responding to each one of these events as they come out? And, oh, you know, what am I going to say? What's my hot take on this story of the day? And then, you know, a week from now, it means nothing because everyone's moved on. So there's some significant questions there about what is the media's role in perpetuating these mass hysteria movements and how do we stop that? So, yeah, a very interesting, very deep story of the year, stories of the year, theme of the year. Yeah, interesting. Well, thank you for that.
Absolutely. Should I go ahead? Absolutely. I'm all ears.
All right. Well, mine is more of a story. Because, I mean, this year has been so crazy, absolutely insane. And of all of that insanity, I think one event looms over all of it, just absolutely overarching and absolutely undeniable. We will all remember where we were when Bryant passed over to Rizzo for that 5-3 ground out in the 10th for the Cubs to clinch the 108th year of World Series drought, and they took it, and no, okay, maybe not, but that was a significant moment. Clearly everyone is going to be talking in these year-end wrap-ups about the presidential selection circus or Brexit or the populist movements or all of that kind of nonsense, and I'm just sick to death of hearing analysis of that, so I hope everyone else out there is sick to death of it too. So I have avoided that for my story of the year for 2016. Instead, I'm going to talk about a story that's kind of like what you said, the biggest story in the world for a couple of days until everyone moved on, and now probably no one even remembers it. But it was way back in April. We covered it on New World Next Week. I covered it on the Corbett Report. The Panama Papers. Remember that? Remember the Panama Papers? Yeah. Well, we did cover it on New World Next Week, and I wrote an article, a couple of articles about it, did a video about it. One of the articles was the one-sentence summary of the Panama Papers, and you might remember that I got a pull quote from Wolfgang Schäuble, the German finance minister, who said, even though it's not surprising, the Panama Papers and what they reveal, it helps us. And he was talking, of course, in the context of the G20 and they want to get support for their crackdown on these evil tax evaders. And so that basically the scandal and the hype that just generated and surrounded this release of information, which, again, from our perspective now in December, who even remembers this, let alone cares about it? But at that time, it created the hype and the hysteria and the political motivation for this big crackdown, G20/OECD. And that's what I noted in my coverage at the time, that this was really about signaling out Panama as the holdout on this big OECD agreement on multilateral competent authority, i.e. cracking down on tax evaders. And I talked about that at that time in that context. This is about getting Panama specifically, because, for example, The Economist had just written a hit piece on Panama and their evil and they refuse to play ball with the OECD, etc. So the follow-up to that story, While You Were Sleeping, October 27th, 2016, Panama joins international efforts against tax evasion and avoidance. And they seal that up with a nice bow, and there you go. Panama became the 105th jurisdiction to sign on to the Multilateral Convention on Mutual Administrative Assistance in Tax Matters. There are now 107 signatories, so a couple more joined after that point. But there it is. There's the bow on that story, the Panama Papers. Remember when you were being told that it was the biggest story in the world, and it revealed all this incredible stuff, which kind of amounted to something in Iceland, and maybe there was a scandal or two that kind of threw some shade on Putin, but, you know, it kind of went away. But this is what this was really about. It was about another brick in the wall of the chain that is forming the grid of global tax compliance. And I'll throw in some more information about this, because, again, it sounds great to most people. Okay, well, we're going to get those evil multi-billionaire corporate tax evaders. What's wrong with that? But it isn't about them. It is about every single individual on this planet being caught up in this web of now 107 signatories. If you live in any one of those countries, then any one of those signatories, any one of those 107 107 countries now has, at least potentially, access to your individual banking details, down to the level of your bank account itself. I'll throw in a little pamphlet about this that they handily provide to summarize some of this, but it's about exchange of information, including on request, spontaneous and automatic, simultaneous tax examinations abroad, about all forms of compulsory payments to the general government, except for customs duties. It applies to taxes on income, profits, capital gains, and net wealth. It covers local taxes, social security contributions, estate, inheritance, or gift taxes. It's all overseen by this coordinating body. The global tax grid is being slotted into place. But no one is even paying attention. So I think the Panama Papers is a good window into that, and I called it at the time. It came through in October exactly as predicted, and again, no one even noticed it in the brouhaha over everything else that's going on in this insane year.
You've got, like I said, I was digging back through our past stories and some of our trends, and you've got an excellent track record, James. It's one of the reasons I enjoy it and proud to continue to be able to work with you on New World next week. This is episode 294, our last episode of the year for December 22nd, 2016. And I do remember where I was when the World Series ended. I was, of course, in line for a concert. And I think you, as you just said, caught up in the web. That hits it right on the nose. I think, again, I like to give the lists of things. My 2014 trend, I said, do it ourselves. 2015 trend, I said, full disclosure and the further exposure of the so-called elite. My 2016 trend was money madness. So I kind of look at that and maybe say, yeah, 2 out of 3 is not so bad. I might actually be a little behind in looking back and ahead of my time in looking forward, if that makes any sense. But here's where my optimism comes in. And like I said, it might be too soon yet, but it was inspired really by some of the bad news I was covering the other morning on my morning show. The great AI awakening, smart meter data at crux of Arkansas murder case, Evernote's not-so-private privacy policy, filmmakers begging for cameras with encrypted storage, and the smart sex toy that reports back to the manufacturer. Kind of seems like everything they call smart is kind of dumb. I know that's almost kind of hacky and cliche by this point. But really, I'm calling Media Monarchy's 2017 trend, cut the cord and cancel the plan. I think this can also relate to the recent fake news brouhaha and our recent Unfollow Friday actions. I think those bad stories kind of got me to thinking about an idea. And again, maybe a lot of these things are sort of more ideas. But a sort of e-speakeasy, or even a Faraday club, where you can go somewhere and read and listen and smoke or eat, pray, love, and do whatever without sending user data back to our new tech overlords. A lot more records and books, for starters. A Media Monarchy colleague of mine, I think, put it best when he kind of recently said, and I think it was in relation to whatever the recent Apple moves were to turn the devices into vending machines without any ports. He said it, but I kind of ran with it. He basically said the shut up and deal mentality of our new tech overlords are going to bring about a kind of neo-Luddite pushback. And I think it's already happening in some ways. Maybe that ties in with your 2015 prediction for alternative media will go from conspiracy to community. And again, I think you pretty much nailed your prediction for this year, begging for daddy government. So that same friend who kind of put that kernel in my head, and I have been thinking about that for several weeks and several months, that people really might start to cut the cord and cancel the plans en masse and start to do more community things together. Maybe not play Words with Friends, but actually like play Scrabble with the humans that come over to your place or apartment. That same friend, actually, James, who made the Luddite comment also today, just actually said to me that he thinks the higher education system is going to completely collapse. So that might actually turn out to be a better honorable mention slash prediction for 2017, James.
Well, once again, you've come up with a nice optimistic trend that we can look forward to. I am afraid I do not have such a happy thing to look forward to. I am picking up on a somewhat related kind of idea, but from the opposite perspective. And it relates back to, for example, that that story that you talked about in your story of 2016, the killer cop robot kills cop killer. But also a lot of other stories that we've covered over the past year, talking about the white-collar robots coming for your office jobs, talking about Davos robot, talking about even things that you covered on Media Morning Monarchy this week, with the Google Translate having been improved by machine learning. Our friend Brock West, of course, just recently tweeted about the White House's new report on AI and the warning of increasing economic inequality that will come as a result of the implementation of artificial intelligence in the workplace, which relates back to Bilderberg 2016, where they were talking about the precariat, which I'm sure is a word that we all just recently learned this year, talking about that class of people who are increasingly in a precarious situation, who are teetering on the edge of a precipice, and whose outlook looks increasingly dim because of automation, robotization of the workforce, artificial intelligence that's coming for your office job, let alone your manufacturing jobs, which are already largely being automated. So this is, I mean, it may be, I mean, I'm not sure 2017 is going to be the year, but surely this is a trend for the future, and it is only going to pick up pace from here, and it is going to become more and more important and going to be affecting more and more people in the very near future. Automation, robots, that sort of thing. And it's not science fiction fantasy anymore. It is increasingly here. Now, again, when exactly that inflection point comes and it starts intruding on people's everyday daily lives, I can't say, but it is certainly coming. And this is the type of story that 99% of stories and trends and things, I can think of the positive side of it. There's a way, you know, there's a way to have community. There's a way to people can work things out. When it comes to artificial intelligence and robots and that, I don't really know if there is a solution that is implementable by us. Because I think you're right, the idea of the Faraday Club and things like that, those are the kinds of things that are great and that people can implement to try to get off the tracking surveillance grid and things. And there are things that people can do and take into their own hands. But when it comes to AI, I mean, you can be a neo-Luddite and you can reject the technology, but other people aren't. That technology and that research is going to continue. It is already here to a large extent, and it's certainly going to be making itself felt in your life more and more in the coming years. And what do you do about that? What do you do when the robots are literally taking over everything? I mean, I suppose there is potentially a good side of this, because it truly could free humanity from the chains of, you know, manual drudgery and labor. But really, I mean, when we become dispensable to the would-be ruling class, won't they just dispense with us? And I don't have any easy ideas or solutions or positivity about this, because again, this is a revolution that's already happening, and I'm not sure there is. It would even be theoretically possible to put the brakes on it at this point.
Can't help but think of that picture of everybody wearing their goggles as the Zuckerberg walks down the aisle with a sort of demented look on his face. Of course, they don't use the drugs themselves. You'll never catch them actually putting those goggles on themselves. But maybe, James, this does kind of relate to the higher education system, and it probably relates in a way to the sort of the fight for 15, all of these fights over what is work and what do people actually want to do with their lives are all kind of coming to a head. And in other kind of psychological ways, those are a part of kind of the fights on the street, because they realize, and I'm talking about the protests after election and things, because there's, as you've said, a huge change kind of coming. And there's probably large amounts of people that realize, oh, I have no place in this new future world where the computer will crunch the numbers that I've been doing, and they won't need me sitting in a seat at this cubicle anymore. You're no longer needed. So that's going to be a huge change. And again, maybe it could lead to that positivity. But in the meantime, it's going to be ugly going through it, to be sure.
Yeah, not a happy note to leave things on, is it?
I guess not. Thanks for another great depressing year of Neural next week, buddy.
This is why I should have went first. Oh, well. All right. Well, anyway, there is some positivity in here that people can pick out. And I'd love to hear other people's ideas for story of the year, for trend of the future. What do you guys out there think about what's going on? It's, again, your participation that makes shows like this possible in every sense, monetary and otherwise. So I want to throw it back out to the audience out there and thank you all for being around for another spin around the sun. And we'll do it again next year, I guess.
James, if I could just again briefly just again extend heartfelt thanks and appreciation for all the work that you've put into this show year after year now. And I want to say a big thanks to our buddy Brock West, who has been editing these videos and making them happen a lot better and a lot faster than you and I were kind of bumbling around at some point behind the scenes by ourselves. As the last kind of closing note, as it is going to be the last, you know, few days essentially of the year, it is the time when people are thinking about giving gifts. I'd like to remind people that we are listener-supported, independent, non-commercial alternative media, and that we both have Patreon accounts, patreon.com/CorbettReport, and patreon.com/MediaMonarchy, and that's really the way to kind of support our work if you find it valuable. James?
Well, that's it. All right. Well, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year to yourself, to Brock, to everyone out there. Thank you for making this possible, and we'll talk to you again in the new year.
Thanks, man.